All right, we're going to head over to our remote Zoom studio. I'm in my car today. Boy, this is my, I haven't done an interview in a car in years. It's been probably 5 years. But I'm glad that we were able to get Andrew Dittmer on the line with us with Enverus. Upstream M&A we're going to talk about today. M&A, of course, let's do a quick little 101, if you will, upstream and then also M&A. And first off, how are you doing today, Andrew?
Doing fantastic. So glad to make it to Friday and looking forward to the weekend.
Finally Friday. Yeah, on the radio, I filled in today for a gentleman, actually the former mayor of Bismarck, Steve Bakken. He does a daily radio show in Bismarck, and we call it Freedom Friday, Free for All Friday, if you will. So we get kind of excited on a Friday. Enverus, what is the company? You know, just talk, give us a little bit of an overview of the company, if you wouldn't mind.
Yeah, we are a leading data and SaaS, so software as a service provider, as well as AI platform, servicing the energy industry across the spectrum of energy from legacy energy, oil and gas production, midstream and downstream to new energy transition technologies. So power, hydrogen, carbon capture and sequestration, really run the gamut. And then my team within the broader Enverus universe is the research team. So we're comprised of over 100 analysts. We write research reports that are sent out to industry participants as well as financial institutions and cover a broad array of topics. But my particular focus is on the mergers and acquisitions side and mostly within the upstream or oil and gas production portion of the business.
One of the things I got in the oil and gas industry about 12, 13, 14 years ago. And I come from media primarily. And my area that I grew up in was pretty much agriculture. So just by osmosis, you learn about agriculture, much like if you're in Houston, Texas, if you're not in the oil and gas industry, you learn about the oil and gas industry just from sheer osmosis. And one of the more remarkable aspects of the oil and gas industry is how vast and broad it can become. You have the upstream, downstream, midstream, and I always made the joke salmon stream because, man, I mean, the flower shops and the bakeries, they're really a part of this whole process too. If you go to a energy community like Midland, Texas, you know, you take the oil and gas industry out of Midland, there's not going to be a restaurant around, there's not going to be a flower shop around. And so talk to me about the upstream aspect. You mentioned you're part of the upstream M&A part. How do you define upstream? And for the listening audience out there that may not be up to speed on what upstream, downstream, midstream, and the salmon stream is, how do you define upstream?
Yeah, sure. So definitely like your point about energy being fundamental to really all these communities, not just the oil and gas production communities, but relatively low-priced, available, reliable energy is foundational to the economy. So it's definitely a fun industry to work in and happy to be part of that. So within the hydrocarbon space, which is oil and gas, upstream is the production portion. So think about actually putting the wells into the ground and producing the hydrocarbons and doing that as effectively and efficiently as possible. Midstream are the pipelines that get the volumes, the oil and gas from the wellhead to the refineries. And then downstream is the refining and distribution of that.
And now when we're talking about M&A, are we talking mergers and acquisitions?
Mergers and acquisitions, absolutely.
So if we're going to put upstream and M&A together as a compound word or a sentence, what's an update on that? I talk with Joe Sinnott. He's an executive coach out of the Marcellus. He's in Pittsburgh. And there was so many mergers and acquisitions this year that, man, I mean, ConocoPhillips and all kinds of different, you know, M&A activity. Do you have an update for us on that? I mean, something that your takeaway might be from just the amount of them and the size of the M&A activity this year has been absolutely remarkable.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's right in my wheelhouse. So it is upstream companies buying and selling each other, as well as buying properties. and private companies. So those have all been major contributors to this current market. M&A is very foundational to oil and gas in general. It's an industry that's always gone through a lot of different waves of selling off assets and then consolidating them back together. But really what we've gone through in the last 12 to 18 months has been very historic and almost unprecedented. I think you have to go back to the late 90s or early 2000s when the super majors were being put together, the names we know now, like Exxon buying Mobil to make ExxonMobil or Chevron buying Texaco to get a similar level of consolidation within the industry. So just to put some numbers on it, we did $192 billion in upstream deals in 23. That compared to just $58 billion in 22 and $67 billion in 21. So again, a historic level of consolidation there, really driven by some of these large hyper deals we saw. So about a year ago, a little less, in the fall of 23 is when you saw Exxon buy Pioneer. Pioneer is a company focused on the Permian Basin in West Texas. That was a $65 billion transaction. You also saw Chevron buy Hess, so part of the 20th century. Hess had a more diversified portfolio with some exposure to the United States, their largest position being in North Dakota in the Bakken or Williston Basin, but also a large international asset in Guyana. That really high level of activity is carried over into the new year. So we're sitting at about $90 billion in deals through July, which is going to be a mix of corporate consolidation. The Conoco deal you mentioned is the one of the biggest. Another historic name, Marathon, deciding to exit. That was a $22.5 billion deal. We had another major acquisition of a private company in the Permian called Endeavor, which sold to Diamondback. And so I think all these companies are trying to gather as much resource as they can. And it's really a story about shale. So shale is this transformative technology that has made the US the oil and gas production powerhouse that it is today. Shale development started about 20 years ago in its very earliest innings, but you could really probably point to 2010 or so when it started to really take off. And so, like any new technology, you had a lot of small companies that were early movers and pioneers. So small privates that then went public. The big incumbents like Exxon were a little bit slower to move into shale, but as that technology and resource base matured, they're kind of using their positioning as incumbents and financial firepower to consolidate the highest quality drilling opportunities. And so that's what we're seeing now is this maturing phase of shale, where the big established companies are increasingly buying up the resource, and it's going to be a bedrock of their businesses going forward.
One of the trends I was noticing about 6, 7 years ago was these consolidations and these mergers and acquisitions. I had US Senator Kevin Cramer on the program about, oh, during COVID sometime. And I mentioned to him that, boy, I the way things are going, we'll probably have a dozen oil companies on the planet, within 5 years. And he said, try three or four. And we were kind of joking about it, but really, I mean, it's almost getting to the point where you're going to have Exxon, Verizon, Chipotle as a company pretty soon, man. I mean, just the way things are going. How are you looking at this? I mean, are you seeing the oil and gas companies really starting to become super majors or shrinking, getting, we'll get into the carbon part in just a second here, but off that comment about, we'll probably only have a dozen oil and gas companies on the planet. You talk about Saudi Arabia, you talk about China, talk about Exxon and Shell and some of the bigger ones. We're almost going down that path. Do you see any change happening or do you see that kind of going that way where the biggers are going to consolidate and diversify?
That's a great comment. I think that was good foresight, and that is the direction we're headed. I don't know about a dozen across the whole planet, but it's a pretty common refrain in the industry. We scroll through the whole list of publicly listed E&Ps, and it's still quite long. 40 plus names in the U.S. and Canada now, and think about what is that going to look like in 5 or 10 years? How many are going to be left? And I do hear like we'd really need to consolidate down to, just a handful of companies. I think that's a response to what their investor base is looking for because these are publicly traded companies. At the end of the day, they answer to Wall Street and their shareholders. And the threshold for energy companies that Wall Street wants to invest in keeps getting higher in terms of scale, and resource depth. And so there's not a lot of interest in owning some of these smaller sized companies that don't have access to as much resource. They're worried if they can sustain themselves over a decade as they drill down the remaining inventory. And so there's really, I think, desire from the investment community to see larger companies that can develop the resource more efficiently. And again, shale being relatively mature, there's always incremental improvements to make productivity from wells. So the amount you get out from each well is constantly improving as the energy industry innovates. We're finding some incremental or small additions to new resource, but we really have a good feel for what the major shale plays are in the US. We're not going to find another Williston Basin, a Bakken in North Dakota, or another Permian in West Texas. And so for these large companies, it's kind of knowing the defined bounds of what's out there and then using M&A to get as large a chunk of that pie as you can. And yeah, I don't really see that trend slowing down. It may take some time. You have to get lots of things in place to get these deals done. You have to have buy-in from the management team. The valuation has to make sense for the buyer and seller. That has to make sense for the investors. But ultimately, I think we do head towards fewer and larger companies.
Diversification has been increasing in the oil and gas sector, whether it's biomass or ethanol or some of the other different air, wind, solar. They were some companies were getting into. When we're looking at the carbon industry, the carbon management industry, it's really spiked in the last couple of years to where Occidental Petroleum is no longer Occidental. They're a carbon management company. I saw they were branding themselves as, and Exxon, they bought Denbury specifically for the carbon management business that they have. We're taking a look at Continental Resources getting into the ethanol side of the carbon sequestration with their investment in this Carbon Summit Solutions. I should say Harold Hamm rather than Continental Resources. Six in one, half a dozen in the other. You know what I mean? Talk to me a little bit about the diversification, specifically the carbon management side. Is that where you're seeing a lot of the oil and gas going now? Or are they still looking at biomass? Are they still looking at wind? Are they still looking at solar? Or is it starting to become more the carbon?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it's still a moving target in the industry on the extent that you diversify away from your core business of oil and gas production and invest in some of these new technologies and where you want to put capital to work. I think your commentary is quite accurate there on the direction it is headed. We've seen the European majors, so think like BP and Shell, lean a bit heavier into some of the renewable energy production, so wind and solar, electric production, and then what we call molecule side, so some of the renewable natural gas, biomass, and technologies like that. And I think that's been a challenging industry to make work for them where they can get a reasonable return on their investment. And so you've actually seen a bit of a pullback, I think, from the European majors on some of those technologies and understanding that, in order to maintain their profitability and their dividend programs, they are going to need to have the hydrocarbon production side. The carbon management seems to be one. So when we say carbon management, we're talking about carbon capture and sequestration. So
Correct. Yeah.
Capturing carbon either as it comes out of what we call point source, which is at a factory as it goes up the flue, grabbing the carbon, scrubbing it out, transporting it and then reinjecting it underground, and then also direct air capture, which almost sounds a little sci-fi to me still, but that's what Occidental is up to in the Permian. They're building the world's largest artificial tree or vacuum cleaner in No Trees, Texas, to suck carbon out of the air and sequester it. I think you do still see more excitement around that technology from some of the major producers. You mentioned Exxon is a great example, Occidental. CRC, California Resources Corp, is a smaller company, but is doing some of the CCUS investment out in California. And I think that dovetails nicely with the core competencies of these companies, which is handling really large, complex, tough engineering problems, particularly with a subsurface or geologic component to them, and figuring out how to make that work. I don't think that's going to be the core business of any of these companies anytime, within our reasonable horizon. But it's certainly something that they're invested in, and it's going to be a nice add-on for their existing businesses going forward. And then finding opportunities for synergy. So they also use CO2 to flush oil out of the ground. That's something the industry has done for decades. And so now you have opportunities to capture that CO2, get paid for the capture, and then put that CO2 into the ground to flush more crude out. And then you can sell that crude. You get paid a bit less than if you don't do the oil recovery component of it, but it's a way to find an opportunity to tie those two business lines together. And we may see a net carbon neutral barrel of crude at some point where you've sequestered more carbon than what you get from burning the barrel. And maybe that'll bring a premium on the market someday for tough to decarbonize areas like aviation fuel.
I just jumped off the air. I did a 2-hour program today, and we had on Lori Hinz from Beck News. And we started talking about how artificial intelligence or AI was essentially taking over the media, where now you're starting to see media outlets use AI for voiceover work and for different reports and that sort of thing. And I kind of made the joke that, before, when you pull up to McDonald's or Jack in the Box or Hardee's or whatever it might be, that person that was in the drive-through was outsourced to India. Now it's being outsourced to AI. It's being a computer essentially is doing the work. How is AI being used in oil and gas? If you mentioned AI earlier, so I'm not sure if you're qualified to talk about this or not, but how is AI being used in oil and gas?
Yeah, that's certainly something our company is investing heavily in, and we're really excited about it. I think AI broadly, we're still in the early innings of our learnings and exactly how these technologies are going to be applied. It is being adapted in oil and gas. I think there's probably better qualified people than me to talk about that. I'm a deals guy for the most part, so I crunch financial numbers. But it's something that the industry is learning about and increasingly applying. There's some great partnerships out there between ourselves and other industry participants with, say, Amazon that are doing some exciting things. And yeah, I mean, ultimately, it's going to be a productivity driver for the industry. So it's placing your wells more efficiently, it's figuring out how to optimize design, and it's doing more with less. So I think that is an interesting calculation that I haven't done, but I wish I had it. The barrels of oil and gas produced in America versus the number of people employed by the industry. And I think we've gotten tremendously more efficient, maybe not helpful from an employment side, but in terms of being able to generate this energy at low costs, the industry has kept up its productivity and kept up production while doing it at lower and lower cost structures. So that's it's all about delivering reliable energy at reasonable costs.
Where are you seeing the AI being implemented in the coal industry, for example, robotics, which would be kind of considered AI, I guess, to a certain degree. The example I used to give people was that, 20 years ago, you'd have 30 to 50 people mining a side of a mountain in a coal mine, right? Now they're down to like six because of all the different robotics and a number of different things. In the media, it's taking over for different voice artists and different that sort of thing. And they don't replace jobs. The jobs get shifted, just because one job goes away from there, that opens up an opportunity in another field. What areas are you seeing the AI being implemented in? Is it the software side? Is it on the rig itself? Is it with the, frac chemist, if you will, with the scientific research data? And it's a broad brush question. You don't have to get into too specific, but where are you seeing kind of the shift happen with the AI within internally within the industry, I guess?
Yeah, again, I mean, there's way more qualified people than me to talk about that if that's a subject you really want to explore in depth. But I think the analogy to the coal industry in terms of fewer people actually in the mine is accurate. I mean, anything about oil and gas development, at the end of the day, you still have people out on the rig that are placing the pipe and drilling the well. But a lot of the monitoring, the control, and other aspects of it can be done remotely now. And so they're either sitting in an office in Houston or maybe in a control trailer somewhere in Midland. So the number of people you need for each well drilled has gone down And I mean, you know, the oil industry has a ton of modeling and simulations and optimizing design, and so maybe you can test some of those with AI scenarios now and optimize your well completion and design before you put the hole in the ground. But again, if you really want to explore that, I'd get somebody that's more in that space than what I am.
Yeah, and a little bit of pop quiz there. I apologize, but you know, kind of a broad brush. Even in agriculture, you're starting to see AI come into where, and keep in mind, a lot of this is driven by safety. A lot of this is driven by safety. When the coal and with the ag industry, that's where you saw the AI and the robotics take over first, was a lot of safety aspects, which does have a positive net effect on your bottom line because the safer you are, the less trips to the hospital, the less insurance, et cetera, et cetera. So it does trickle down. The I guess kind of the last question, or as we kind of wrap up a little bit here on the data and the you mentioned the SAS, SAAS, is that right? SAAS. Give an overview of that for somebody who may not be familiar with how data and SAS, SAAS, is being used in the oil and gas industry.
Yeah, so the oil industry, I think, is relatively unique in the amount of data that's out there because of the public reporting requirements that oil and gas companies have. So every state has a regulatory agency that you have to file with when you permit a well, when you complete the well, you report your production up through them. And as we've looked at some of these new technologies where the reporting requirements are less, I think you do appreciate just how much data is available in oil and gas. And so it's really amalgamating all that data, making it useful for our clients, and then applying interpretations to help them make the most of it.
How is it that companies are saving money with it, I guess? Because at the end of the day,
Yeah,
that's
and
what
again,
we're trying to do,
right. I mean,
right?
it's making the data more available and efficient, and helping the clients use it more effectively.
So it's the old time is money right
That's
there.
right.
Save
Yep, for sure.
money.
Yep.
Is there anything that we've left out that you feel people should know about the upstream M&A from your point of view, from somebody who's maybe in the industry, a seasoned veteran who might be looking at some of this new technology? And 2 years ago, they probably looked at it like, oh, this is a fad. This is something that's not going to happen. Now they might be looking at it a little bit more closely. Talk to those people if you wouldn't mind.
Yeah, I mean, on the upstream side, we expect the consolidation to continue. There's relatively
Really?
limited attractive opportunities out there. We've had a lot of private equity investment in the space. They're going to continue to roll up those portfolio companies, and they're going to continue to look at the smaller size public producers and find opportunities to buy them. And ultimately, like you said, we're going to end up with fewer but larger companies, and that's going to kind of be the structure of the industry going forward.
All right, last question here. I made the joke earlier about Verizon, Chipotle, Exxon being a futuristic company. And when we take a look at some of the diversification happening in the oil and gas industry, Amazon and Microsoft and some major companies like that are starting to partner with these oil and gas companies. Do you see a weird scenario like that where either Microsoft or Amazon or might get
No.
in the oil and gas industry
Nope,
or
not at
vice
all.
versa? Oh, no, that's
No, they no, the partnerships are good, but they're not going to be merging Exxon and Microsoft.
okay. You don't see anything like that in the
No.
near future. Okay. Anything we left out? Any
Nope,
final thoughts?
I think you got it all. All
All right. Hey, Andrew, thank you for your time today.
right, appreciate it. All right, have a good one. Enjoy chatting. Bye.